This is the Rolling Often podcast, and we're back again this week to talk about something everybody's talking about these days, AI. But we found a little something about AI that other people maybe aren't talking that much about. And this was all Dave's idea, so Dave, let our audience know.
Indeed, indeed. So we've actually had this topic for... As Jon mentioned, about 8 years on our list of things to talk about. It suddenly popped into my brain that I actually know someone who would be a great guest to have come join us to talk about this, which is the ethics around AI. So we are indeed joined by aforementioned special guest, Sally, who's going to come and educate us on the world of ethics and AI. So, unless there's anything else from you, Jon?
No, when it comes to ethics, I know nothing.
In that case, let's dive in and learn something. So, we have our special guest today. Welcome, Sally, to the Roaring Elephant podcast.
Thank you very much. It's good to finally be here.
Indeed. Indeed. We have known each other. And I must admit, I had to go and look the date up. We've known each other since back in 2012, I realize, which seems like a very long time ago now.
Wow. Okay. That's a bit scary.
Indeed. We're here today to talk a little bit about some of the ethics that and ethical situations and maybe even unethical situations going on in the world of AI. But first of all, you know, quick intro to those who haven't known you for an extended period of time. Who are you? How did you get to where you are now?
First of all, my name isn't Sally. my name is Golestan Radwan, but most people call me Sally just because it's easier for everyone. I'm currently the Chief Digital Officer at the UN Environment Programme, also known as UNEP, based in Nairobi. And how I got here is, well, just before joining the UN, I led the national AI strategy for Egypt, for the Egyptian government. I am originally from Egypt, but I'm also a British citizen. And before that, I spent years and years and years working for the private sector. I'm a computer engineer by training, so all my roles have been in the tech world, from the super, super techie to the super, super non-techie on the business side. And for the past 10 years or so, it's been focused on AI. So working for AI startups in product management, and then moving to the policy side, but still with an execution arm as well. So that's how I got here.
Awesome. So what does the Chief Digital Officer of the UN Environment Programme actually do?
I wish I could start with something glamorous, like we're digitizing the planet while trying to protect it at the same time or something like that. But the reality is we do look at both of these things, the two sides of the coin, if you will. Mm. So on the one hand, of course, we're very excited about the opportunities that digital technologies, especially emerging technologies such as AI, afford for the planet, or what we call the triple planetary crises, namely climate change, loss of biodiversity, land degradation, everything to do with nature decline. And then the third one being everything to do with pollution and chemicals and these kinds of things. And across these three crises or these three areas, we look at how to deploy digital technologies in the most efficient way, and in a way that helps us achieve all our goals, while at the same time ensuring that these technologies are safe and sustainable for the planet. So everything we do looks at both of these sides, including building digital tools and solutions. So we're building something called the World Environment Situation Room, which we hope will deliver on the glamorous name it holds, which is really to give you a state of the planet from an environmental lens. And it includes many different bits and pieces around use cases and analyses using AI and without AI. We also look at data, of course, as a major enabler for AI. So we're currently working on something called the Global Environmental Data Strategy, which seeks to harmonize how we govern and use environmental data so that it becomes easier and more interoperable and easier to build those complex scenarios that we all crave to save the planet. So it's no longer feasible or enough just to look at climate change or biodiversity or whatever in silos. We need to have an interconnectedness of these and also connect them to other important factors like human migration, safety and security, health, economic development, and so on. So all of these are things we look at within our work, in addition, of course, to the normative function in which we look at things like the environmental footprint of AI and how we can reasonably accurately measure it, but also decide when it's time to curb it across the entire value chain of AI. So that's more or less a snapshot of what I do.
many things. Fantastic. I mean, one of the kind of interesting points, like towards the start of your intro, is you mentioned the fact that you've been fairly heavily involved in AI and AI related companies, organizations, products for, you know, in excess of 10 years. Now, obviously, AI has been around for quite some time, but of late, let's say the last, I don't know, four years, obviously with the rise of generative AI, it's been given a fairly significant shot in the arm in terms of its growth into the public space and public awareness of AI topics. So maybe start with something relatively simple. Like who should actually care about the ethics of AI, and maybe, you know, start off with the obvious Jurassic Park quote: "Your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should." But yeah, like, why should people care about the ethics of AI?
Yeah, big topic. I think if you touch AI in any way, you're part of its moral architecture, and you have an obligation to look at the ethical dimension, because if it doesn't affect you, it will affect someone you care about or something you care about. So I think one thing that we still haven't gotten right, I think, is that we seem to still live in two isolated worlds, the world of ethicists and policymakers and the world of techies. And I have the fortunate or maybe unfortunate position of having lived in both. So I can see the perils of both. And I really see the importance of more interconnectedness of these two worlds. Because if we look at something, I am getting a little bit into the weeds now, but just to take an example of explainability, right? Which is something that, an expression that's being thrown around a lot by both sides. And the problem with something like explainability or interpretability, and we don't even seem to agree on what each of them means and what the difference is. But if you talk to the ethicists and policymaker communities and non-technical stakeholders, they will, for the most part, tell you that explainability is imperative. In fact, it's included in some of the recent policy documents as an absolute imperative, and you cannot use an AI system that is not explainable. If you go to the technical community, depending on their level of sarcasm and or cynicism about this whole thing, some of them will literally laugh at you because in many cases, explainability is an unsolved problem. and the more sophisticated you get with your AI models and your and the deeper your neural networks get, the less explainable a system becomes. And then you get snarky comments from some prominent AI scientists like, oh, so you want me to output every single weight that gets adjusted along an 80-layer deep neural network, and all you'll see is a bunch of uninterpretable mathematical equations and crazy numbers. So what do you do with that? And of course, that's not what the world is looking for. But there's this disconnect between, you know, the techies having, and I'm generalizing vastly, of course, but the techies having a bit of an attitude of just trust us, we'll do it right. And the non-techies saying, oh no, we'll never trust you. We need to see everything because we don't understand what you're actually doing. And there aren't enough people in the middle trying to mediate that conversation, which then leads to, and I know this has been a very long-winded answer to your question, but this leads to then us not really knowing who should be involved in AI ethics, because it's slowly becoming something that techies are too good or too important to think about. And so it's left to only non-techies, and I say only, it's vitally important to have, of course, all of these opinions there, but they are, for the most part, lacking the non-alarmist, and I have to emphasize this, the non-alarmist voice of the technology experts who understand how these things are built, but who also have a very vested interest and a strong drive to help with the ethical side. And I don't think we have enough of those. And we don't have enough non-technologists who understand enough of the technology to be able to make informed decisions and recommendations. So in other words, everyone from the designers, developers, all the way to the users should be involved in AI ethics, that should care about it.
Yeah, I am a bit offended though. I mean, tech saying, trust me, that never went wrong. That's always been okay, come on. But seriously, a question I had was, with the new Gen AI models, the reasoning models, and now also display or show how the model reasons, this feels like it's going towards the explainability question. But when I look at what they actually produce, it's more of a publicity stunt, in my opinion. So I haven't delved deep into it, but I'll be curious to find out what your ideas around that. Is this actually the techies doing something serious towards explainability of these big neural networks? Or is it just some window dressing, fun stuff around it?
I'm a techie at heart, so I don't want to offend the techies, but I think it's a happy coincidence. I mean, in some ways it's cool, right? So you want to show that your model can reason and that it can also show the world how it reasons. I haven't seen any evidence, let me just put it that way, I haven't seen any evidence that this was driven by a real desire to make models explainable. Yeah. And so I don't know how accurate it is. I don't know how useful it will be to every type of user. I'll give you a quick example. My PhD is actually mostly based around this, around trying to untangle this tension between what the model developers think of when they think about explainability and what the rest of the world, namely different user groups, want. And for the most part, it's not really this step-by-step explanation of reasoning, although that is important, but what they want is transparency along the entire development process. They want to know how your model was built, who it was tested on, where the training data came from, how it was pre-processed, you know, what are the different target groups it was tested against, and how do you ensure minimization of bias? How do you ensure that your sample, you know, your training data, but also your validation set were representative of every single user group that is going to be exposed to this system. And none of these are things that model developers care about disclosing nowadays. And of course, let's not forget that although they've started with, you know, generative AI really giving a boost to the world of AI and its usage, which is very true, but it's not just about AI. In fact, about generative AI, or indeed about reasoning models. In fact, some of the more powerful AI applications are not generative AI, so they wouldn't have this big deal at all.
Yeah, I mean, the canonical one is the old image recognition models that were trained on very Caucasian Western people, and then using that for recognizing faces, and that went very wrong. And I think this is over a decade ago by now, but that was basically bad data used for the training, or not incomplete data, maybe not bad, but at least not covering all of the groups.
Yeah, biased data.
That had nothing to do with, nothing to do with GenAI at all.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking about when you were mentioning like this tension between like the techies and the policy creators, I almost feel that there's almost like another group of techies that, again, a little bit like the Jurassic Park situation, they're just excited about doing something with cool tech, and they just like the thought around the ethics of something just never really enters their mind. They're just like, this is cool. I've got access to all of this data now, and look at all of these amazing things I can do with it, without necessarily stopping and thinking about not just the impact of what they're doing, but the level of access they have to data, and the, you know, what the things that they are being asked to do or to create actually then, you know, what that does in the real world once it's rolled out.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't mean to vilify techies by any stretch. Like I said, I'm a techie myself, and I'm also excited about cool tech. And I tinker with these things every weekend, you know, and I just like building cool things. And this is a very fair thing to do. And let's be fair also that, you know, throughout our relatively short history of computers and digital technologies being around, we've never really been in that situation to this extent. Sure, there's been the internet, and there's been social media, and there have been different kinds of software and robotics and everything, but as you were saying, we've never had that much influence and that much reach, and that much obscurity of what we're doing and how it could affect people in invisible ways that is being posed by AI. And so putting the onus on the developers without equipping them with the right knowledge, with the right tools, to really stop and think about what they're doing, and just expecting them to overcome their natural tendencies to be excited about building cool things is a little bit unfair, I think. And we see this with science. I mean, we have to spend a lot of time teaching scientists about ethics and putting safeguards and guardrails and checks and balances every step of the scientific process, because it can affect people's lives. And I think we will eventually need to build something like that into the AI development process.
Yes. I mean, it's not a new thing, right? Because even in the 60s, I've read somewhere that we would never have been to the moon if we had ethics. Because how ethical is it to put a dog in space? No one's going to die. The rockets they used were safe-ish. They kind of hoped they were going to come back. So there's also this idea behind ethics actually being a blocker for innovation, for advancement of technology, science, and in the end, the good of people. Because without science, we would still be dying of very simple diseases these days. I mean, medical world also, I think, a nice example where very much unethical things have happened in the past. that have eventually become, can I say positive things? It's again, ethics is a difficult thing to talk about. But yes, AI now, you're right there. And that's the difference, I think, that now it affects everybody directly in a very invisible way. In the early days, it was not as direct an effect, but still, it's something that's been, should have been part of every scientist. Let's call them scientists, not just techies, because it's broader, just the tech world, I think, mindset.
And there we go. Excellent discussing these kind of topics with Sally. Certainly, I learned a great deal, even just during this this first session. We've got more content to come, though. And anything else from you, Jan?
No, that's just a great conversation. Way too long for a single episode. This is going to be a two, maybe even three-parter. We'll see how far this goes. But very interesting stuff. Looking forward to the next one.
Indeed. Well, in that case, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, comment, hit the notification bell, all the YouTube things. And you can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about this podcast. Please send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. But until next time, my name is Ethically Questionable Dave.
And my name is, I'll just ask ChatGPT what ethics is all about. Yum.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.